Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
They won more battles. Talked to the team about that after the first period. They were quicker. They were stronger on pucks. So, you know, it's a will. The 50-50 is a will. The will to hang on to it in the ozone. I think when we got going in the second period, we saw what that looked like. But starting a game like that, there's no excuse for it.
Could have used a little more zest in that opening 20, and perhaps it would have been a different result. Marty, welcome in to a Friday edition of Sabres Live, which, yep, of course, features Shayna Goldman a little later and Michael Leone a little earlier. He is the head coach of the Amerks, so we look forward to previewing their matchup with the Marlies not only tonight, but they have a back-to-back with them this weekend. But honestly, I'm sitting here not knowing how I should read the score. It was 6-4 for Columbus. Is that indicative of the game? Is it too flattering towards the Sabres? Is it too harsh? Like, this was a strange one for me.
Well, you know, there's a saying is to fix a problem, you got to know what the problem is. I still can't look at last night and pinpoint it to one problem. I can look at last night and pinpoint it to a lot of problems. And I think the last two nights, the Pittsburgh game and the Columbus games, but despite the 6-5 and the 6-4 results, they were both very different games. And, you know, they were both games that the Sabres could have easily won. Even when it's 4-3-0 and power scores late in the second, you're thinking, okay, a last-minute goal is going to propel the Sabres to get one good period. One good period of hockey is going to win you a game. Mm-hmm. And 13 seconds into the third, it comes crashing in, right? And the giveaways and the puck management, when it had been an issue the night before, is on display again. Was it a good night by Luukkonen on Wednesday night? Nah, it wasn't a great night, but at least the expected goals for Pittsburgh were 6. So he gave up 6 when the expected goals were 6.
Right, yeah.
Because defensively, the Sabres were not good at all. Last night's game, the expected goals were not even 2 for Columbus. So that was not a good night for Devon Levi. And Lindy Ruff actually mentioned the Marchenko goal that made it 2-0 late in the first as not a good goal. But okay, it wasn't a really good play by Mathias Samuelsson either. So it starts with Sammy giving the puck away to a Yuri Kulik that was going for a change. And it's not a good goal, but and there's plays that happened before. So I'm like, what's the problem on this one? Is that the Samuelsson pass? Is that the Levi giving up the goal? Like, it's just it. So to fix it, you got to know what the problem is. I'm having a hard time pinpointing to one problem right now when I look at goals individually and overall of a game.
Yeah, I think that's where my confusion lies, not only with the final score of 6-4, but some of the numbers within it. Like, to sit here and think that Buffalo had twice as many, is that right? High danger chances last night?
Yeah, it was 14-7 at the end of the night.
For Buffalo?
Yes.
Like, it did not appear to be a game, to me, where Buffalo would have had a 2-1 advantage in opportunities.
Okay.
Like, well, I didn't think that. No, all that does is accentuate what you just said. Pretty tough night in their own zone and from the goaltender out, right? Columbus had very few opportunities. They made the most of all of them, pretty much, right?
Yeah.
But I just didn't think Buffalo had enough going offensively that they could have ever been in a position to have outchanced their opponent 2-1. It's just, it's a strange one, and it's, it obviously, because you can tell my reaction, it's surprising. Like, I did not see this kind of effort or outcome coming in this situation. Now, that being said, I actually fully expected Columbus to be even better than what they were in their first game in front of their home fans. And they hung in and played so hard and so well and so emotionally against Florida. But I expected them to be better. I think they got the result they wanted last night. I'm not sure how much better they were, but hey, the result is all that matters.
Yeah, but okay, so again, this is where I'm looking at last night, and you talk about the numbers. One number that stood out to me when I was watching, and this is why, please do not pay attention to stats like giveaway and takeaways and all of that at the end of the night.
Hits?
Okay, well, let me tell you that
there were almost none last night, and that to me is disappointing based on what they're supposed to be bringing at this
point. Were right? 9-6 for Buffalo last night. So whoever's taking the hits,
I think the statistician inadvertently put his elbow on the marker like 15 times.
But okay, giveaways were 14-13 by Columbus. So Columbus gave away more pucks than Buffalo. But then when I look at the giveaways and I see that Matthias Samuelsson has no giveaways, and I'm like, we clearly saw that he gave the puck away to Marchenko on the goal. So I'm like, don't look at the stats when you look at hits, giveaways, takeaways, because it doesn't mean anything. It's one person's view of the game. At the end of the night, it doesn't mean anything. So that's one. But we've talked with Shayna Goldman last week about teams that have changed their colors a little bit from a rush team to have been able to adjust, right? Mm-hmm. So I look at Pittsburgh. Okay, well, the first goal, Tage Thompson, is a bad play by Tristan Jarry with the puck. But then it's Greenway on the rush. It's Peterka in a two-on-one. It's Peterka gets behind everybody, comes in and scores. And it's McLeod on a high cycle. So really one goal was the result of spending time in the offensive zone, okay, mm-hmm. against Pittsburgh. You scored five. One of them is time spent in the offensive zone. Yesterday, you've got the 2-1 goal, which is McLeod all alone on a nice play by Sucker. That's a rush goal, right? You got Kulik. It's a deflection off of a faceoff. It wasn't really established in some zone time. It was you win the draw, you get a shot on net, you score. You've got power and a rebound. That was the only one.
Wasn't even a rebound.
No, it was a block.
No, it was a pass from their defenseman. Block. That's why it was unassisted.
It was a giveaway.
No, I couldn't believe it. Like it ended up like as when you hear it and kind of see it unfold, you hear Dahlin the shot, boom, power puts it back. And then I was like, wait a minute, unassisted. And yes, it was a direct pass.
It was a kind of a pass where you jam yourself and it goes to power. Yeah. But I'm looking, okay, so that's another issue is that one of the thing, yes, the Sabres can try to play with speed, but at the end of the day, what makes a team able to win a game 3-2 or 4-3 instead of losing it 6-5 or 6-4 is that you're going to spend time in the offensive zone. You're going to have the puck 200 feet away from your net. You're going to wear teams down. There was no wearing down of Chinnikov or Fantilli or Marchenko yesterday. Werenski and Provorov were doing whatever they wanted with the puck. Mm-hmm. There was no wearing down of anybody. And that is something that I feel Lindy Ruff is very disappointed about. When he talks about the game, he talks about we were sleepy. Yeah. You know what? Like, I get it's back-to-back, but you know who else wasn't sleepy yesterday at the start of their game, having played a back-to-back game, having lost 8-7 and 6-2 in their previous two games was the LA Kings. They played back-to-back. In the short distance travel from Toronto to Montreal, so did Edmonton, you know, going to Nashville. They won both. But, like, you can't use – don't tell me back-to-backs are –
Was Edmonton not back-to-back? Am I wrong on that? Was Edmonton not back-to-back?
I'm not sure.
I could be blending the days. It doesn't matter.
But I know that LA was back-to-back, and they responded in Montreal against a team that they're like, we have to beat, and we have to play straight from the start of the game. And Buffalo, after that loss to Pittsburgh, needed to have that same attitude, and the sleepy start was definitely not acceptable. Now, you know, I don't want to kind of mix and match a lot of things, but sometimes there's things that come back to my head that other people have said. And I remember Don Granato saying that last year and even the year before, that when you are under stress or under pressure, sometimes individuals revert to old habits. And that was one of the things Don Granato used to always say, I have to break the old habits to be able to move forward. And what I saw out of the last two games were old habits, old negative losing habits that when the Sabres were, when Pittsburgh came back at them, they panicked, they reverted to old habits. When Columbus took a 2-0 lead and then a 3-1 and kept coming back, scoring a goal 3 seconds, a minute right after.
They had three response goals.
Exactly. When they got their response goals, like, reverting to old habits. And that is where the biggest problem lies for me. When I look at, to be able to fix the problem, you got to know what the problem is. These reverting to old habits and panicking and making bad plays and turning the puck over, that to me is the biggest thing that I saw in the last 2 days that I was blown away. I was like, we're done with this, you know, like giveaways and players caught out of position and, you know, not being strong in front of your net. Like, we're done with this. This is going to be completely different. And the old habits reared their ugly heads in the last 48 hours.
You mentioned the Marchenko goal earlier as being one that, you know, like, I really like Marchenko as a shooter, so I don't see as much issue on that one where he scored on Levi simply because he's a good shooter. Did you see the third goal for Fantilli as a tough rebound to give up?
100%. I know there's a screen, but that's I remember going to Francois Allaire, the goalie guru, and my very first goalie school with him in Montreal. He's doing a classroom session, him and Benny Allaire. And they're like, goaltending's equipment is 95% supposed to give out rebounds. The 5% is your glove. When a shot is going to your glove, catch it. So you're not giving a second opportunity. Now, I understand there's a screen on the play, but and Levi almost got the rebound, right? When Fantilli scored, he almost got a piece of it. Good battle. But you can't give up that rebound. That is, and really the Mathieu Olivier goal too. The Sabres make it 3-4. No, they made it 3-2, right? And that was with the Kulik goal. And right the next shift, Connor Clifton gets in on the play, gets a shot blocked. Malenstein is playing defense with Samuelson to back him up. And it's a 3-on-3. The pass gets put between Malenstein's feet. Olivier is a right-handed shot. He's cutting to the middle. And you know what? Like, it's a good play. It's a guy all alone. There's a save. That's a save there, right? That's the same thing, in my opinion.
I suppose, yes. My concern is my notes had that this was a 3-on-4 and that Columbus went untouched to the goal. And I don't know how that happened.
Yeah, well,
you know what I mean? Like,
and I don't want to put the blame on Malenstein. He's a forward playing.
No, I'm not. I'm blaming the four that were in the picture and somehow let Columbus go to the net untouched. Like, there's.
I'd like to see Sammy come over a little bit because he knows it's a forward there, and he's like, "Hey, I got to help him out." Yep. And I'd like him to slide over, help out the partner.
And based on what has been talked about, I would have liked more speed and urgency on the neutral zone backcheck.
Backcheck, because
this is one of the lines that is supposed to have the speed in its game, right? So again, it just, I'll go right back to the start and sorry to beat the dead. Oh, by the way, Edmonton was not back to back. So yes, that was a stupid thing for me to say. But I'm just surprised.
Lafferty was right there, half a step back to catch, catch a puck carrier on the entry. And you're right. Like, everybody needs to help out. It's that time, like, where everybody needs to do a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also had written, which you basically said in a, with different words earlier, that many of the Columbus goals were not earned, so to speak. They were too easy. Yeah. The goals came too easy for them. And that makes for a very long, obviously.
The goal early in the third period, right? 13 seconds in.
It's 2-on-4 when they casually came into the zone. And unfortunately, not one Sabre wanted to make a situation a 2-on-1 or take a lane away. I couldn't believe how easily it unfolded
again,
for them.
I love this new feature on NHL.com. And I've talked about it before, the goal simulation, because it's like you see the numbers move and the players tracking. So they entered the zone, right, on the half wall. And now we saw Power and Dahlin play a shift together at the end of the second period, which led to a goal. Power scores. So now I'm like, oh, let's take a look, because I would pretty much guarantee you that Power and Dahlin are going to play together in the third period and try to change things up, especially on the back end. And that's the first shift of the period. Yep. And Owen Power is on the right side and Dahlin comes underneath. You know how the weak side defenseman comes underneath and then there's a switch? Mm-hmm. Well, Power reads that Dahlin's coming over. So he bails.
Man, I just hit my butt.
Give me a second, it's going to come back. That I again, I get too excited and I hit the buttons on my microphone.
Like you're at the drive-thru.
I know exactly. It sounds really muffled. But so because of the switch underneath, Dallene comes over and Power reads that, oh, Dallene's coming over, so I'm going to go towards the middle. But Dallene peels off. And then nobody takes Aston Reese in the slot because everybody is kind of peeling off and turning away. Again, like this is a very correctable mistake. But reverting to old habits have been the problem here. And this was one of the problem when you look at being aggressive. Oh, we need to play on our toes. We need to play forward. We need to play fast. We need, okay, well, I can show you like so many examples of that didn't happen. And why it didn't happen? Well, because you reverting to old habits, which are not good habits because they haven't produced anything yet.
The end result is Buffalo's 1-4-1 through the first six. They have a game to go on the trip. It is tomorrow night in Chicago. We'll be on there at 7:30. Pre-game coverage on MSG. Of course, when the Sabres are back home, we definitely want to see you for Hockey Halloween. That's October 26th. It's a 1 p.m. start. The Wings are in. Spookiest costume is what we're encouraging, and we want you to celebrate Halloween with the first 5,000 fans in attendance receiving a wearable Goathead-themed flag, and there will be a trick-or-treat trail available for the first 1,000 fans in attendance in the concourse. So visit sabres.com/tickets today. If you're looking for the hockey fix in the area tonight, no better place than Blue Cross Arena, where the Amerks are hosting the Marlies tonight. Head coach Michael Leone with us right now. Michael, how are you? How would you sum up the start to the season so far?
You know what? It's been really good. Obviously, would have liked a better outcome on the Friday, but I really think looking back on that opportunity that we got to have playing those preseason games really helped the group. You know, our record was probably better than I thought it would be playing those preseason games, but we played a lot of really good hockey. I think the first game Friday night, we were a little, I would say, you know, timid nerves. And then the game Saturday in Utica was a really good performance from the group. We were, I think the shots were 17-2 in the first period. We played a really good game away from the puck, like where the group is at, and excited for the opportunity tonight to compete against a really good team.
Now, you mentioned training camp. It was unique with the team, the Sabres going to Europe, and you guys having to really stay here in Buffalo, play a lot of preseason games, get that opportunity. Who stood out? Who stood out to you, a guy that, oh, you know what? Maybe that person or these players would not have gotten NHL preseason games, experiences, or opportunity, and kept that going now in the start of the season with your club?
No, really good question. Yeah, I think a lot of our, just if you look at obviously our core, it's a younger group. Just to see the younger players, the Oslins, the Heleniuses, the Wahlbergs play those preseason games, the Komarovs, and play really well, I think set them up to have a lot of confidence to start the season. Even, you know, players like Murr and Yabo had a great preseason for us playing those NHL games. And I think, you know, especially the game in Columbus, it was pretty much their full lineup in ice. That was some of our younger players' best games. And I think it was a great opportunity for our group and how we wanted to play, and bled into the first couple of games here that we started our season.
I you know what? I think Zach Metz, for me, was a guy that stood out in the Sabres preseasons. And now he started the year with a couple of assists in the two games. But really, really was one that you had to notice by how he played in the preseason.
Yeah, I knew I was going to miss somebody, but he had a great just his competitiveness. He did a real nice job on the power play, the way he defended away from the puck, especially for undersized defensemen. And it started his season on the right note for sure.
When you took the job and started looking at the potential roster, did you envision the lines the way they may be right now? And the reason I ask is because you've not shied away from putting a lot of your youngest players together on lines, where I think instinctively, some people might go, could use a little more of a veteran like on each one here. How and why did you kind of land where you are with this line combination so far?
You know, we kind of went away from that. We did it in preseason, and then the first game of the year, we kind of got away from that. And we went with kind of slotting guys with older players, and the outcome we lost. So we went back to what we did in preseason. And I just think it's, you know, you give, obviously they're young players, but you got to throw them out there and you got to see what they can do. And I would say the biggest thing with these young guys is their play away from the puck and their habits are really good. So sometimes they're really young. You look at the lineup sheet and you see the birth year, but it's been really impressive to watch their details away from the puck, and you can kind of see it in the preseason. And they've done even the game in Utica. I look at up and down the lineup. We were skating. We were relentless on pucks. And I think it's been a trend now on the past month and a half, and we just have to keep it going. But I think with young players, yeah, as long as they're working and they're competing, obviously mistakes happen in game, but where the identity piece and the standard we want to play with, as long as they're out there, they give us a good chance. And I think it builds on when the season moves on. What does that player look like in November and January? And they just making sure we keep getting better.
You talk about the youth, but one guy that is not so young, but look good in preseason and look good in his first start of the year is Michael Hauser. He's 32 years old, but the house cat can still pull it. And obviously the Sabres lose James Reimer on waivers. He was probably technically the third goalie, probably your guy to rely on in Rochester, but house cat had a great start. How impressed and what did you know about Michael Hauser when you took the job?
Well, the one thing I will say is after the first loss, yeah, everybody on staff was, we're all right. We got Housecat in Utica. I think he's 7-1. So he was outstanding. You hear about him, you know, just what a great teammate he is. And then in the room, how he is every day. I think guys love playing for him. I mean, there's something to be said about that. And he's done a really good job, did a really nice job in preseason. And he made a couple really big saves in that game when it was 2-1, where he kept it there. We did a really good job away from the puck. But the saves he needed to make, he was awesome. But just being around him, the life that he gives to the group, his energy, it's been great to see.
Sandstrom tonight, Hauser tomorrow, the expectation?
Yes, Sandy's go tonight.
And then last one for me is, as you're, you know, taking on this first job in pro hockey, how challenging is it to put the lineup together each night, knowing that certain veteran players aren't going to get in every night, but obviously have the resume that says, boy, it's pretty hard to take this person out?
Yeah, no, I think it starts with the communication piece. I think that's really important to communicate with the players on where they're at. And I think that's a really big thing with players nowadays. You just got to make sure you're honest. And sometimes they may not like to hear what you have to say, but as long as it's honest and it's coming from a good place, I think it goes a long way. And yeah, just sometimes it's when the group's playing well. Some guys, like we look at our lineup in Utica that night, you know, everybody top to bottom, you know, even our Kozak line, they gave us a lot of good minutes, a lot of momentum shift after goals. And, you know, when the team plays well, sometimes you keep the lineup the same and we're going to go with the same lineup. But I think the communication piece is huge. And then even, you know, we put the line together of Murr and Dunner, and they played really good in preseason together, and Yabo, and they give us a lot of, you know, responsible shifts, but also ozone time where they can wear on guys. So like the way we play now, we just have to keep it going.
You mentioned, I mean, Green Bay in the USHL, the NTDP and all of that. The bus trips were a lot longer going in the Midwest and everything. You guys went to Syracuse, Utica. You're going to Toronto. Can't even take a nap or watch a movie in those trips.
Oh, no. I told the guy, this is easy. This is going to
be that's what I was going to say. Is this a change for you?
Yeah. No, even I, I probably got too used to that plane rides with
in preseason.
Oh yeah, those were great. But no, the travel's been really good. Not like we had a couple really long ones, 6-hour game day trips to Cedar Rapids. This is a lot better.
Talk about trying to fire up your team after they've been on the bus for 6.5 hours to play a game the same day. Ikes.
Yeah.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Short trips this weekend for both you and for the Marlies, obviously, in this back-to-back. Good luck tonight. Thank you for your time, as always.
Thanks a lot, guys. Have a good one.
Coach Leone with the Amerks. We're back after this. Shayna Goldman joins us next on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
It's a good thing I did not wear my Sudbury dinner jacket, Marty. We would look like twins, Shayna and I, right now, if I had come blazing in with the black and red. But it's great to see you, Shayna. How are you?
I'm great. Yeah, I feel like I needed that fall energy. And I also wanted to like channel the goat heads a little bit, because I think that's what the Sabre season's missing.
Well, I mean, we're missing quite a bit right now, but the weather in Buffalo is at an all-time perfect right now. Sun and not a cloud in the sky, so it's beautiful. Which I said, you know what? Sabres lost 2 games. They gave up 12 goals, scored 9, but the sun did come up today. So, Shayna,
isn't that what they said on a Mets broadcast this year? After one of their most brutal losses, like they were trying. This is the energy you're giving me right now.
But you're saying the Mets are still alive, although they lost yesterday, but they're still in it. So that's the thing. Okay, so there's some bad, there's some good, there's probably some ugly with all of it. I mentioned that I feel like the Sabres are reverting to old habits, right? They got punched in the mouth in Pittsburgh and then again in Columbus, and their natural instincts is reverting to some bad habits, and something that the coaches are going to have to work really hard with this group. Do you know what some of those habits would be, other than just saying the turnovers, the puck management? Like, I look again last night, a lot of it is on the rush, not a lot of zone time. Like, is this still a big issue for the Sabres?
Yeah, it feels like it. And I mean, I'm sure it's hard after that Penguins game too, because you think, well, we stayed in it for a team that has playoff aspirations, and then you go play Columbus, who everybody knows is probably in for a top 5 pick. So you look at it, and you know, I think it's easy to get complacent with that. But yeah, I think that you definitely need to generate a lot more in the zone. You need to make plays. You need to play defense in the offensive zone. I feel like it's like the most underrated part of defense is talking about defense in the offensive zone and making those plays to extend your zone time and holding the puck at the blue line and forechecking to get possession again, and just protecting the puck to maintain possession. And it's those little elements that I think that they can definitely work on. You're seeing a couple lines add a little bit of spark in the offensive zone. And I think someone like Jordan Greenway surprised me. You look at some of his numbers, you know, there's a couple games, so if we say scoring rates, they're going to be like incredibly inflated. But right now it's, you know, his start is a better pace than he's ever had in his career. And he's shooting the puck a lot more than he has in the past. And he's going for that quality offense more than he has in the past. Because when you look at his success in Minnesota, he was kind of the passenger to Foligno and Eriksson-Ek. And now he's taken over a little bit more. So you're seeing him have a huge impact on the Sabres quality offense. But there's a lot of trouble back in his own zone, which is, mm-hmm. I think, the more surprising part of it, because we know he's so good defensively. So if he can now marry the two strengths together, that would be great, but you need the work there.
The shots on goal for Rasmus Dahlin are just under 2 shots per game right now. Again, small sample. They've only played 6 times. The points are not coming for anyone on the power play yet, as they are 0 for 17. But we did spend a fair amount of time talking with you prior to puck drop on this season about pairings and partnerships and forging ahead in this new world where you have a full season of Bo Byram, a full season of Owen Power, a full season of Rasmus Dahlin, all in that same group of 6. Like, that's a lot of high-end offensive potential. Where are we at here through 6 games with this group of 6?
So I think Dahlin, at times you're seeing him just be okay, which is a start, right? I think altogether so far, 5-on-5, he has a good impact on the team's defense relative to his teammates, which is a pretty low bar because the defense has been pretty rough from a lot of the other skaters. Yep. But the offense isn't matching it. Him with Power, they were paired together a bit at 5-on-5. They had no puck luck whatsoever. So I think the results looked worse than what the underlying play showed. But the underlying play wasn't as high octane as you'd expect from two players with those capabilities. And maybe sometimes you need more time to gel. I think the surprise to me is I don't mind Dahlin with Joki Haru, when generally I would say that's a player you don't want going up against top competition. I think they have like 70 minutes together and they're on the ice for about 60% of the expected goal share, yeah, which is a promising start. And the team has the results in those minutes. If you, I don't want to say saddle Dahlin with Joki Haru, but if you can kind of mitigate his weaknesses and let the pairs below him kind of shine, maybe it works, because I think Dahlin's a good enough player that he can make up for what his partner might lack.
And when you look at the defense, though, Byram has had a tough go with Power. Like, the numbers are just not good. And last night was a really good example of that. And then you had to change something. And I think Connor Clifton has had a good start this season, but Matthias Samuelsson, a very underperforming start to the season. I know that Bryson and Gilbert are waiting to get in. Gilbert got in when the Sabres played 11-7. Would you go 11-7 at Chicago tomorrow to say, let's bring some new energy on the back end, and you know what, let's put it on the line and say, hey, a few, and then maybe that mortgages your forwards, but you get more ice time for Thompson and for the Peterka and for the guys that maybe can lead the way.
Generally speaking, I hate 11-7 because I think your pairs can't gel, and I think your forward lines get a little bit tricky. Against a team like Chicago, though, why not? Especially because, like you said, you're going to get more minutes for those top guys. And I wonder if that will help them get on track a little bit more, because Tage Thompson looks really good. But Turk is back in the lineup and he has brought a spark in a very, very, very short time. And even guys like Dylan Cousins, it's not terrible. Like, Cousins looks pretty good defensively, but the offense, it feels like he has no puck luck right now. He's even shooting the puck more than he generally does, which helps add to his puck moving abilities. Why not kind of lean on those guys and put the pressure to them a bit? As long as everyone's healthy enough, right? Like, Peterka and Benson, you don't want to over-leverage them if they're not 100% yet, and that would be my one concern. But on defense, why not try to change it up, because what you have right now is not working? You know, like the Clifton-Samuelsson pairing. You have two defensive defensemen together. And sometimes on a team that works as a second pair, right? Because we're seeing sometimes the number ones not get top competition because they're better off having their minutes maximized so they can play to their strengths on both ends of the ice. And the second pair becomes that matchup minute shutdown pair. Can that work? Yes. But your top pair needs to be so good, so high octane. And that third pair, I think, needs to be so offensive that it all clicks together. And that's not happening right now. So I worry about that likeness of the two being together. Why not try to just interchange and try to see what clicks against a team like Chicago? It's totally different than saying, yeah, you're going to try that against Edmonton.
Well, the Hawks have, to their credit, played pretty well here out of the blocks and obviously come in off of a win over San Jose. So they will host Buffalo tomorrow night. It's made more interesting, I think, this discussion about potentially 11-7 when one considers and revisits the scratch that happened last night, and that was Jack Quinn. So if you take a position away and presumably are still trying to get Quinn back in, and again, this gets trickier to rearrange based on the fact the Sabres are averaging almost 5 goals a game over the last 3 games, mm-hmm. like, Marty, you might even want to start with this. Like, where do we put Quinn back into the equation? Do you start making other changes amidst the forward group? And oh, by the way, just to put your punctuation mark on Dylan Cousins and his puck luck, he is 0-for-22 this year. No goals, 22 shots. Only Dougie Hamilton has more shots in the NHL without registering a goal. Hamilton is at 24.
Yeah,
Marty.
So I think you have to put Jack Quinn back in because, look, you had scored 5 against Florida, 5 against Pittsburgh. Yeah, Jack Quinn was not playing like the Jack Quinn that we know he can, but I think a lot of that responsibility.
We loved him against Florida. The Cousins we loved him against Florida. It was the talk of that night.
Started to get, first period was great. I think Jack Quinn, though, is. Okay, Dylan Cousins is not creating offensively, and he's not helping Jack Quinn, right? And we saw that Benson with Tuchin Thompson had more chances, and then he goes with Cousins, and it's not the same thing, although Kulik scored. I'm almost starting to think that if you want to reinsert Jack Quinn in the lineup, you got to start maybe mixing your lines up a little bit because to help him, like maybe you got to get him away from playing with Dylan Cousins. You got to help him a little bit. Shane, I don't know if that makes sense because Paterka, Thompson are doing well. Greenway offensively is doing well. So do you mortgage the way other guys are playing so that you can get Jack Quinn going offensively?
Yeah, because you know you can always put them back, right? It's the early goings of the season. And as much as I feel like the Bedard line in Chicago is performing, we know they have those defensive flaws. So that, I think, should open the door to it if you're going to test it right there. I would have no problem with it. I think Tage is showing that he is Tage Thompson, the best French player in the world right now. He is showing he has all that and more. And it's not just on the power play, right? He looked really good at 5-on-5. He doesn't have a goal on the power play. And I kind of love that for him because I think sometimes when someone succeeds on the power play, it's that confidence boost that trickles into 5-on-5 play. But if you're driving play at 5-on-5 the way he is so far, you're not as worried, right, about everything else because the most important part of the game is being taken care of. I think that you can separate the two and say, let Paterka be that spark plug for Cousins because I think we know he has that capability to do it, especially because he's picking up where he left off last year. It felt like he was so good no matter where you put him and he can just add a little bit of jump and be the guy and be the driver, which generally speaking, you want it to be your center. But if Cousins can't drive his own line right now, let Paterka take some of that burden off of him. I don't even have a problem if you go Paterka, Cousins, Quinn and say, start that way. But yeah, you can definitely mix and match. It's so early in the season and you don't know what's going to click. You're under different coaches. You have systematic tweaks, like figure out those new combinations because it's better to figure them out now than in March be like, now we need to start trying new things. Everything's stale.
Power play or penalty kill is more worrisome right now. The penalty kill is 15-for-21. The power play is 0-for-17. Giving up 6 goals on 21 is not good for the penalty kill, but the power play is not producing anything. So what is more worrisome to you?
Power play. The penalty kill I don't think is that bad. I think the goaltending has not helped them, honestly. I think the quality chances against have not been as dire. And I also like the offensive spark that they've been adding while they're shorthanded. I think that can bring a lot of momentum. The power play is the more deflating one if you don't convert. So, and it was such a problem last year after being so good the year before. So I definitely have a little bit more of a concern for that because they have all the talent, right? Like they have the personnel. It's just figuring out how to make them click. And I know they don't want it that it's, they're going to rely on Tage every time for a one-timer to score, but maybe that's what you need to do to start going, especially because he looks so good at 5-on-5 and you're looking at him going, well, he's not playing through an injury like it seemed last year. That would be my opinion, focus on the power play. And I know with the new coach, right, you don't focus on special teams to start the year. Your focus is going to be 5-on-5. And then as you start clicking and grasping onto those tactics, then you focus on special teams. But I think knowing that this is a more than year long problem, it can get more deflating than it would be if it was just a bad start.
Would you like to go around the NHL with us quickly?
Let's go.
There are 4 players in the league who have an active 5-game point streak. Who are they?
Active 5-game
point streak. Marty, you can help this.
Okay.
Lafreniere, I think, is one. No.
Nope.
Is it Panarin?
Nope.
Kucherov?
Nope.
No, he's only played 3 games, so he can't.
I'm thinking from last season. Okay.
No, 5 game streak already this year.
I was going to say, but Tuck had a 4 game, and did he not have a point yesterday?
Panarin has 4 straight multi-point games, but he does not have an active 5 game streak.
Seamus Casey.
Nope.
Jeez.
Wow.
I was not expecting to exhaust the entire segment with this question. It was amazing.
These
who has played five games?
Eichel, Stone, Wyatt Johnston, and the reason I'm asking the question.
Evgeny
Sam
Malkin?
Reinhart.
Broberg in St. Yeah. Louis.
Oh my God, that's right.
And
that's
this is awesome because, first of all, Joel Hofer had an amazing secondary assist on the game winner in overtime last night. But Broberg was right in the middle of it. And I think, just especially because you don't love the Blues, I thought I would throw that into the mix here. So the
other one is, that was exciting, though.
It was exciting. I mean, for a 1-0 game, like, obviously it was just, you know, look, Neighbors was such a good story for St. Louis last year. This is his first OT winner. This is great. There's one more that I'm obligated to mention all the time, Marty, and he is still very much in the race for the Rocket. Paul Cotter won off the league lead.
Cotter.
He's got five goals this year, so let's keep her going, Paul.
Woo! Yeah, Dylan Gunther and Paul Cotter, but Kucherov is saying, hold my beer. I got six goals in three games, and they're exciting. Nashville couldn't beat the Oilers yesterday. They've not looked good
all. So, Shayna, Nashville or Colorado?
That's the question. This or that, Shayna? This or that?
Nashville. Colorado, their defensive breakdowns and the goaltending looks really bad, and I think you're seeing it get to Guriev. He looks so over-aggressive. But Nashville at 5-on-5 does not look good, and I want to account for the roster turnover because you're bringing in so many different players. I think that's the Oilers' problem because you look at them and you're like, look how many players exited the lineup and now new faces that came in. You have to account for both things. Nashville at 5-on-5 legitimately does not look good at all in any of these games. I don't think Saros has looked as sharp as he can, and I'm not really worried there. And I think Brady Shea has gotten off to a brutal, brutal start. I think he has one of the worst average game scores in the entire league right now.
I think we should have seen it coming, though, because Nashville last year were 31-30-3, and then they had a 16-0-2 streak. They were
a 5-on-5 set streak.
I know, but they had, I get that, but other than
Marty,
that streak,
that's why they addressed it the way they did. Like, let's know, be better than average and bring in three really good players, and it hasn't worked yet.
It hasn't worked, but I think there's a system issues in Nashville that needs to be corrected. They were one game over 500 other than that streak last year, and now it's creeping in again this season.
So my hot take with that is about Andrew Brunette. My biggest criticism with Andrew Brunette and why I did not think he should be the Panthers coach after he finished the year was I did not think he was ready to be a head coach. I think he was handled a well-oiled machine, and when it started to falter, he did not know how to correct it. And I thought he really impressed me last year in Nashville because I was like, I feel like he learned from his mistakes, but it's like, you might have finished there, but you're not necessarily going to pick up where you left off. So I'm really curious now if he's learned how to be a little bit more adaptable and if he has the answers when things are going wrong, because it's not just bad luck. It's not that they're not finishing their chances, is that they don't actually look good. So what can you do with these new players to take last year's well-oiled machine and continue it to this year?
Yeah, the challenge, of course, is not just bringing in new players. You're legitimately bringing in two of the top individual goal scorers in recent memory in Marchessault and Stamkos. And it no matter what you tell them, they just have to find a comfort zone themselves. And then, lo and behold, the coaching is going to look a lot better. That's usually how it works. Last one. Oh, yeah, I needed to throw out an apology to Seattle because I said a week ago they can't score. They've scored 18 times in winning three of their last four. And because you're good for a wisecrack or two, both of you, how would you describe the play of Ivan Fedotov with Philadelphia?
Yikes.
Thank you.
I was going to say, what was my initial thought on Fedotov when he came into Buffalo for his first start? Can't really move. He's big. We're seeing he can't really move right now. Like, they just...
Good thing they have Urson. It's a good thing they have...
And was that Kolosov will probably get a start or two in the next month here because they need to see what he's got before he goes back to Russia.
Shayna, thank you, as always. We'll see you on the air with us soon.
Thanks for having me.
Shayna Goldman from The Athletic will wrap Sabres Live after this.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
A lot of times we promote events with the knowledge of, you know, there's still some tickets to be sold. I can confidently say Congratulations, Joywave, on their sold-out show tonight at Town Ballroom. It's the end of their North American leg of their tour. Unfortunately, as many know, I've not been 100% healthy, so I won't be able to attend. So apologies to Daniel and company. But yeah, it should be a great show for them. And we're right back at it tomorrow, Marty, with the Sabres and Hawks.
Yeah, so it's an 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern start time. So it will be a 7:30 p.m. pregame show. It'll be interesting to see and hear from Lindy Ruff and some of maybe lineup changes and try to get a win. Like, I know this is not the way you would look at it, but if you win tomorrow, you get 3 points out of six. Whoop-de-doo, but at least it's to close it out in a positive fashion.
Yeah, no skate for the Sabres today. Obviously, they'll have morning skate tomorrow, and we will go from there and see you then. Enjoy the weekend, everyone.